So there's a number of things going on at the time, the love in concerts, but yet in the background there's also, is there not also a lot of tension because of the Vietnam War and the split between the generations and so forth?
I don't know if I ever sensed any of that. Again, I was apolitical. I was anti-war. I really didn't get involved in it a whole lot. I knew I wasn't going to Vietnam, and that was it.
Dale, Greg?
Well, and the we didn't play the clubs where, I don't want to call them the war people, because I'm sure they're not the war people, but the straighter people, not part of the subculture, they would still go to the clubs, and there were bands that were playing the clubs and playing the top 40 music, but we didn't do that. The places we'd play, people would sit on the floor and light incense, and we weren't a dance band, so we never really had to run into it other than at truck stops.
So now you're a concert band.
Yeah.
Instead of a dance band.
Yeah.
You don't like the word?
Well,
I think that's just what people did at those venues. They just, the hippies would come in and light their incense, make themselves comfortable on the floor, get high, and enjoy the music.
And every once in a while, a girl smelling of patchouli oil would be over on the side going.
You mentioned the Labor Temple, which opened, I believe, early 69. Do you recall some of the early acts you went and watched?
This was one of our favorite times. At this point, I believe we were being booked by David Anthony.
And managed by?
Bruce Brancig.
No, John.
Oh,
Burchard.
Oh, John Burchard. but anyway, David Anthony booked the Labor Temple.
Yeah.
And it was so cool because he would put us on the shows, and not only that, if we weren't working the shows or another gig, he would put Greg and I on stage or selling popcorn or doing equipment, doing anything to make a nickel.
So and we got to see all the shows.
And we got to see all the shows.
And we played with our favorite group, Spirit, and Johnny Winter.
And we did not do a Spirit song before opening for Spirit.
What was your first opening song? Honky Tonk Woman.
Was it?
The very first song you guys did at Labor Temple. I was there watching.
I think you're right.
Honky Tonk Woman. Rain.
Clink, 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 clink.
You're right.
That was our opening song.
Wow.
So we have an eyewitness in Denny Johnson who saw you.
Wow.
I saw him.
Okay, and also you mentioned the Velvet Underground, correct?
Yep.
Lou Reed.
And Nico.
Mm-hmm. She was the lady.
She was the transgendered person on drums that would play her bass drum
sideways
with a mallet. She didn't use a kick pedal. Hmm. She used one hand to play the kick and one hand to play the snare.
Well, when Small Faces came to to the Labor Temple, and it was our job to go pick them up at the airport, which we did. It was Rod Stewart, Ron Wood, great guys. We were so impressed by these guys. We were backstage during their performance, and they had the greatest attitude. They were just the greatest band. Rod Stewart was so cool. It really impressed us a lot.
Do you guys remember that their equipment never showed up?
No, I don't remember that.
Denny Johnson had to bring the stacks of marshals for Ronnie to play through. And all the Joker's equipment is what they used that night.
Wow.
Never showed up.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
This is great. Yeah. This is filling in blanks on my life.
Lots
here.
Lots of holes.
But so, Joker's Wild were a David Anthony band as well, so.
He owned us forever.
Yeah.
Any other acts that you saw at the Labor Temple that you recall?
Well, Alice Cooper.
What sticks out in your mind about the Alice Cooper show?
Just had never seen anything like it. Just bizarre.
As far as theatrical?
Theatrical, and the way he ended the show.
We went with these two girls from St. Cloud. When they got done, the lights were on. There was smoke in the air. There were chicken feathers in the air.
Well, they had some blower, giant hoses that blew chicken feathers
everywhere
into the whole venue.
And apparently John Burchard, who was the manager of our manager and also the manager of the Labor Temple for David Anthony, he was backstage with Alice Cooper's manager, and Alice Cooper's manager said, Did you hear that? You hear that? And John said, I don't hear anything, because nobody was clapping. Nobody knew what to do. And he said, yeah, isn't it great? And we're out there, and one of the girls from St. Cloud that we were with, she stood up and put her hands on her hips. They can't do that.
It wasn't a typical ending of a show.
That's never right. Before seen anything, just total chaos.
Another act that was great to see at that time was Golden Earring.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They just were great. The ones who had Radar Love.
You got mm-hmm. it. Just great guys. This was a winter gig, and they had a Mercedes
van.
Yeah, and truck. It would not start after the show, so of course we were
pushing
right there,
it.
Right there, pushing it.
Pushing it down the street mm-hmm. in the snow.
Mm-hmm. Any yeah. other acts come to mind from the Labor Temple days?
Oh, boy. Johnny Winter was Johnny really Winter. Cool.
He opened for Johnny Winter.
He was so cool.
And Edgar was on the show, too.
Yep, Edgar was on playing. He did Tobacco Road mm-hmm. with Johnny.
And it was so cool because we'd be downstairs in the dressing room and Edgar would just be walking around with his sax in his mouth, warming up, and just, it was just so cool.
And Johnny was in tip-top shape back then, very healthy, and he would float around the stage like a banshee or something. It was great just to see him perform.
So besides the Labor Temple, where else does Pepper Fog perform?
We do clubs like, at the time, New City Opera House was a big local club where mm-hmm. bands... Underground bands could work primarily. The Litter, Joker's Wild, Pepper mm-hmm. Fog.
Yeah, we saw Cream there. We saw
they bring in
Blue
National
Cheer
acts.
There.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a great local club.
Yeah.
Yeah, we out of town, we would work different colleges, Mankato State, a lot of armories. Duluth Armory was kind of a mainstay. We worked there a lot. It was a large venue, had a big following up in Duluth. The Tower in Austin was a fantastic club that we all know. A lot of people worked down there, had a big following. Cloquet Armory, I recall. Didn't we have a little problem up there once?
After a gig, yeah.
There
was an issue.
There was an issue about, I think it was a flag that Greg had draped over his keyboard. And
No, I thought it was me running into an altercation with the local authorities.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
When you mentioned the Duluth Armory, I'm thinking to myself, so you guys play, and you get up to Duluth in the wintertime, it might be like zero, and light snow... You finish at 1 a.m., you look outside at 1:30 a.m., and all of a sudden there's 6 inches of snow, and now it's 15 below, and the wind chill's 30 below.
Yeah.
We would usually stay at these little cabins up just past Duluth, so we would not travel that at night.
Ah, okay.
The Wonderland cabins.
Yeah.
I just thought
by Two
that.
Harbors,
two
just
harbors, yeah.
south of Two
nice
Harbors.
Place.
Yeah.
Did you find a different reaction when you went to the out-of-town clubs compared to the in-town clubs, or was it pretty much the same?
We attracted the underground wherever we went, the counterculture.
At some point, did the band start writing original songs?
Yeah, we had been writing. Like I say, as soon as I started playing some songs on piano, I started writing on piano.
So who did the original songwriting in Pepper Fog?
Greg was wrote a lot of tunes on his own. We wrote songs as a group, mostly as a group.
Dale wrote some things. Dale and I wrote some things. The whole band. Ron wrote some things. I wrote some things by myself.
So, and I understand at some point you went into Sound 80 to record some of your original songs.
Yes.
Right.
Recall some of the names of those songs?
Mr. Smith,
Let Me Go,
Please Let the Sunshine,
Celebration,
Coming Home,
Old Time Feeling.
Okay, Celebration, now is that the version that winds up on the Gathering at the Depot
yes.
album?
It is.
Okay.
Right.
So your recordings at Sound 80, do you recall who did the engineering?
That was Tom Jung, who eventually moved out to Hollywood, I believe.
New York.
Was it New York?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We learned an awful lot from Tom. We were very fortunate back in those days that we could have such a big following and make a decent living. At least we could pay our bills by playing original music. We were encouraged by Tom a lot. I remember he would give us tips on, you know, arranging and things like that. He was pretty good. But we pretty much didn't listen to him and did what we were going to do anyway. But he was a very good guy.
Pete Martinson, too, was second engineer.
And I remember thinking about it. At this time, we didn't know it, but we were becoming a cult band.
Really?
We had a cult following that we still have today. In fact, it's unbelievable. But
both of them, I think.
Yeah, all three of them, I think. Mm. But it's still unbelievable that this many years later we can have reunions and our people will come back and see us. It's great support.
How did you like being in a recording studio as opposed to playing live?
It was very educational. It was very interesting. It was fun. All of the above, yeah, for me.
Do you recall if it was if it was 8 tracks or 16 or 4?
I'm sure it was 8.
Probably 8 at the time. Denny, do you recall? Weren't they the old...
Yeah, it would have been 8 before 16.
The Scully machines, were they? Or, yeah.
Or, 8-track 1-inch, probably.
So 8-track 1-inch tape on a Scully machine. Yeah. And your songs in the studio, did you do some overdubs now at this point?
Yeah, that was fun. That was the fun part of it.
That was the cool part.
Yeah.
How did you normally do a song? Did you do the instrumentals and then do the vocals?
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, the multi-tracking thing was new to us, and it was really exciting, especially, well, for each and every one of us. But, you know, some drum things that they did were very cool. The effects that they used were cool for me. Instead of just hearing a regular drum sound, they were putting digital reverb on it and running them backwards, and it was cool, very cool.
Were you working on an album, or were you just kind of recording songs to see what happened?
I think we were just getting experience at the time. Mm-hmm.
I understand in the summer of 1969, Pepper Fogg had the opportunity to travel to Salt Lake City and open up for the Zombies. What's the story behind that?
But this was, we were going to Salt Lake directly from the Cloquet gig.
Cloquet and the next night at Duluth.
At Duluth, right.
And then we took off after the Duluth gig on Saturday and drove straight to Salt Lake City.
That's a long drive.
Yep.
In a U-Haul rented van.
We didn't stop for anything but gas. The new driver would sit on the top of the driver's seat. Then the old driver would kind of slip over into the middle with his left foot on the gas. The new driver would take the wheel and jump down into the seat and put his foot on the gas. We didn't stop for anything but gas.
Back in the days when you had to be careful when you were doing that.
So, Dale, what happens when the band arrives in Salt Lake City?
Well, we get to Salt Lake City. We drove straight through, and we were there to play some gigs with Paul Revere and the Raiders. We got there a couple of weeks early. Because we had a job booked at a club called the End Lounge.
And it was a lounge.
Mm-hmm. Sure was.
By that you mean what?
Well, it was a dance club. This was downtown Salt Lake, and this wasn't where the hippies or anybody, underground people went. It was a dance club. Yeah.
This is where the Jack Mormons went. Jack Mormon is someone who drinks and smokes, but they're still Mormon.
Okay.
And they were an older crowd, and they were just trying to dance and get laid, and we were not the band for them.
I think they had us advertised as being from New York.
By mistake or on purpose?
Probably just to try and draw in some people.
Well, we met people in Salt Lake that thought Minneapolis was back east, so they just probably thought New York for some reason. Yeah. I don't know.
So you play at the End. And what happens?
We got fired
after the first night.
Why?
Because our material didn't It wasn't the right material.
Didn't gel. Yeah, we weren't playing any top 40.
You were playing underground music.
We were doing the Hendrix and the Cream and
Jeff Beck.
Vanilla Fudge.
And you were in a top 40 lounge.
Correct.
Right. So we made a deal with the owner. We told him that we would stay up all night and learn every song on the jukebox if he would let us continue the gig.
What did he say about that?
He said okay.
Yep.
So you stayed up all night?
For a couple of nights.
And you learned all the songs on the jukebox?
Jojo was a man who thought he was a loner.
Yeah, he worked with us, and, you know, we could crash on the stage and rehearse. And.
But he cut our pay in half.
Yeah.
And he ended up cutting us out of the second week.
So you were booked for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And how long did you play?
1 week. And when we went to get paid, he gave us half the money.
Now, remember, we're in a rented U-Haul van.
Oh, didn't we have the trailer?
No.
Oh, we stayed in a trailer one night.
We slept in trailers.
Bob and I slept in a trailer one night. I just remember in the middle of the night, somebody rolling over in the trailer going...
So after that job comes to an early end, then you play the job with the Zombies?
Correct.
How did the job with the Zombies go?
It went great.
Yeah. Was that, what venue was it at?
I don't know, like a bigger venue.
Outdoors?
I don't even recall. Yeah.
But that's where we started meeting some underground counterculture people.
Right, there was a park called Sugar House Park, and that's where we met all the hippies, and the hippies would let you crash at their place, they'd feed you, it was just a great time of life.
They told us about a place called the Old Mill, which every Sunday a bunch of bands would play like all day, like an indoor love-in from noon to midnight. So we checked that out after our gig with the Zombies.
And you start playing there?
We lived there for the first week. The guy let us live in this place. And then we'd play there every Sunday for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. And we'd meet some interesting musicians, for me, for the first time in my life, because we had never jammed, per se. And there was a drummer out there that said, do you want to jam? And I said, because all I've ever done is learn songs, learn parts. And he said, just start playing something, you know? And then that's how we learned how to jam. We'd never done it before that
Dale,
time.
Is that new to you too, jamming?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We met this wonderful guy. His name was James Warburton. He had a band called the James Warburton Mission Band, and he was a very staunch Christian, and he tried to proselytize with his band. He was a great guy, and he introduced us to jamming. It was brand new for us. We had never let go before and just let it happen. You know, like Bob said, we would learn songs, learn parts, and really never let it go beyond that. And James introduced us to that and just changed everybody.
James's wife was a white witch, and she would cast a spell over the stage so that James wouldn't feel any of the hatred that people had towards him.
And a white witch is a good witch?
Yes.
It's like Glenda.
Yeah.
Glenda.
A good witch? I'm a good witch.
Now the Sunday jams...
Not a bad witch.
Were the Sunday jams a private thing, or did the public come in and watch?
Everybody came.
Yeah.
It was a hangout.
Yeah.
The place to hang out.
Very interesting place. It was made out of stone and old bricks and stone because it was an old mill. And it had hidden... rooms, hidden passageways, hidden floors. There was we actually discovered a hidden floor.
The walls were hollow.
It was haunted. we had a really strange experience there that even as I recall it, even find it hard to believe that it really happened.
But, what happened?
We met some women one night at the club who were...
They smelled like patchouli oil.
Yeah. But they were, we were talking about how we thought the place was haunted because of all the strange things were happening. He said, well, let's have a seance.
They were white witches.
But by strange things happening, what do you mean?
Well, things would appear, it's really, it sounds silly to even talk about it, but things would appear on the back of the stage, a kind of a body shape appeared on the backdrop someone had these people these women would channel the spirits, and they had told these women that there was a hidden room, and we actually found the room. So he had this spirit.
I'm getting the willies. Should I be getting the willies?
The spirit told these women that there was a fire many, many years ago, and his family had died in this place, and told these women where the room was, and we actually found it and found the charred opening, and it was pretty strange. Pretty strange.
How long do you stay at the old mill?
We were there 2-3 weeks.
Yeah. We slept on the stage.
And then we got another gig in Ogden.
Where was Ogden?
Oh, it was about 35 miles north of Salt Lake City, and it's where all people who were not white lived, because Salt Lake City didn't allow anybody of any color to live there.
A lot of Hispanics, if I recall.
Hispanic and black community.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall the name of the club?
The Lagoon.
And was this a top 40 club or what?
Well, we thought it was. When the guy, the owner, came to audition us at the old mill, we had our gear set up on stage. So we went up and we played our stuff that we had learned for the end, all the top 40, and we pulled things like Sugar and Spice and things that we knew from our past. And the club owner said, yeah, great. So we went. That's when we went to Sears and bought uniforms, matching uniforms.
What did you buy?
We bought blue work shirts and white silk ties, polyester ties, and white Levi's.
So you had matching stage outfits when you on your first night at the Lagoon.
Yeah.
And how did you go over?
Boy, they hated us. First set, they hated us.
Because?
Well, we had asked the end of the set, and Dale said, you know, if there's anything you'd like to hear, let us know. And if we know it, we'll do it. And if we've heard it, we'll try it. And on the break, the largest, blackest man in the club came walking towards us with this little piece of paper between two big giant sausages of fingers. And he handed the note to us, and we were going, oh man, he's going to want Wilson Pickett, he's going to want James Brown, all the stuff that we don't know. And we looked at his list, and it was Third Stone from the Sun, any Jimi Hendrix, any Jeff Beck, all the stuff we did. What we didn't know was that there was an air base in Ogden, and all the people on the base, they all got high. They all liked counterculture music. So our next set, we went up and we took our ties off and we started playing the stuff that we normally did, and they loved us.
Bob, what do you recall about the Lagoon?
I recall it being a really good experience. I believe the Stones were there not too much before us, and Greg thought he discovered a jacket that Mick Jagger had left there or something. We don't know that for sure, but Greg would choose to believe that, and that's great.
I'm sure it was.
It's just a good time. I mean, being on the road, being that young, but just a great time.
Dale, how long did Pepper Fogg play at the Lagoon in Ogden, Utah?
What was it, about 3 weeks, I think.
Mm-hmm. And what do you recall? Anything stick out?
Nothing in particular other than you know, we just had a wonderful time, met a lot of good folks there.
So at some point, you guys returned to Minneapolis. How long were you gone altogether?
Oh, boy. A couple of months, 2.5 months.
Yeah. Well, we came back a changed band, though.
What changed?
Well, we did learn how to be free. We learned how to, quote, end quote, jam. And so with that new chop in our arsenal, we interjected that into pretty much everything we did. And as a matter of fact, all of the original music that we wrote after that, we would always write in the section for being free, jamming, etc.
And I believe, you know, during that time, I think we were only going to be booked out there 2 weeks or so. But we were out there for several months, I believe. And what really brought the band together that we didn't really notice it at the time, but when we got back to Minneapolis, the guys at the agency, David Anthony, would remark on what a total change we went through, and I believe it was all due to all we did was play music and learn.
Now, I understand when you came back to Minnesota in late summer of 69, you found a farm to rent. Where was that located?
That was out in Plymouth. Great little place. It was known as Pepper Palace.
The Lazy Pea.
And it was back in the days when most musicians in Minneapolis knew each other. The community was still small enough to where if you didn't know someone personally, you had at least heard of them.
Well, and they didn't consider it to be competition.
Right, we were so all friends.
You know, it wasn't so cutthroat.
Yeah.
Did the whole band live there, or just part of the band?
The whole band, except for Ron Merchant.
But we had a lot of folks, a lot of friends out all the time, a lot of jams, continually.
Every night.
Yeah.
Do you recall roughly where the farm was located?
County Road 6 and 494.
Right, which is now a off-ramp. Running
it's a
right
Lowe's
through.
Or something, or yeah. a Home Depot.
But in 1969, that was probably out in the country.
It was.
Yeah.
And it was just a great environment for a band. You could play music 24 hours a day. And Tom, you have to understand that we're poor kids. You know, we make enough to make a band house payment and get a little something per gig, but we're very poor, and but at the same time we spend our money on chickens, on pigs, on geese, on everything.
After we fed the livestock, we didn't have anything left for us.
That's true, and we could barely feed them, let alone we could barely feed us, let alone them, you know. But we made it look like a farm, and it was a good time.
How long did you stay at the farm?
We were probably there for a year or two before another farm across the road came available, and we moved over there.
We had the coolest neighborhood out there. There was our farm on the south side of County Road 6. Across the street was an old couple, another band, a young couple whose husband was a cop, and another older couple whose husband was a cop. Two cops, two bands, and an old couple. That was our neighborhood.
And we all lived happily in the same little area.